Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now, this year in her book, Becoming, Michelle Obama opened up about her fertility struggles. She revealed she had had a miscarriage and how isolating that experience was.
I felt lost and alone, and I felt like I failed because I didn't know how common miscarriages were, because we don't talk about them. We sit in our own pain thinking that somehow we're broken.
Now, in the book, Michelle Obama also reveals that she used in vitro fertilization to conceive Malia and Sasha. This admission was meaningful for a lot of reasons. Many women struggle with infertility and don't always talk about it, but according to fertility experts and sociologists, Black women were more than twice as likely as white women to say that they wouldn't feel comfortable talking about their fertility issues with friends, family, a partner, their doctor, or even a support group. That's a finding from the Black Women's Health Imperative and Oprah magazine. Yesterday, we were struck because we came across a Twitter thread by one of our favorite guests on the show, L. Joy Williams. She's the head of the Brooklyn chapter of the NAACP and host of the Sunday Civics podcast. She was taking time off from tweeting about campaigns and started a hashtag called Black and IVF about starting her journey with in vitro fertilization. Her first tweet was, "So friends, this week my husband and I begin hashtag IVF. I plan to share along the way because there are too many women who suffer in silence regarding fertility, particularly Black women. Hashtag Black and IVF." Joy, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
Why did you decide to start the hashtag Black and IVF?
Well, you know, I was trying to, going through this process, and I've been, you know, suffering with these issues for some time, particularly going back to my first miscarriage. First miscarriage was years ago. And I needed an outlet other than talking to my partner, other than talking to my therapist, other than talking to doctors. I needed another conversation to describe what I was going through, what we would have to go through, the process, and just describing it. And being very active on Twitter, I thought about how to use the platform to sort of share this process that could be helpful to other women who are experiencing the same thing, particularly Black women, right? And in that clip you mentioned in the beginning, talking about feeling isolated, even during my miscarriages, I'd never had a conversation about pregnancy loss. My first miscarriage, and I remember, you know, the shame and the sadness and everything about it. And then when I would talk to women, they could quote to me dates of when their first miscarriage was. Mm-hmm. Both family members, women on the street, or people that were, you know, consoling or saying something to me, NAACP members, you know, and some of them with children of their own, grown children, but could still quote the date, you know, from 70s, from 80s, of their first loss.
Because it feels like a death.
Yes. Well, it is.
It is a death.
You know, and so the fact that I discovered this world, this sorority, I guess you can say, of women who had experienced loss in this way, were experiencing fertility issues, and I didn't know about it, never talked about it. I just thought from a kid, just like, oh, you get pregnant and you have a baby. Like, I didn't know that there was anything in between.
If you agree or accept the findings from the Black Women's Health Imperative, why would there be a racial disparity in women's comfort levels talking about infertility?
Well, I think one is talking about medical issues in general. You know, there is a disparity, and there's a culture that has an impact on it as well. And like I said, there are so, from our overall society, these stereotypes of Black women being, you know, fertile and, you know, having babies not only for themselves, but, if you don't have a culture of talking about those kinds of things, you know, it does seem out of the ordinary. And it then further makes you feel like something is wrong with you because this is not a common conversation. And so just as Michelle Obama's talking about, like, I felt that I failed, that something I did, maybe I ate something, maybe I shouldn't have ran this time, or, you know, all those kinds of things. You think something is wrong with you because you don't know of this world that exists of other people experiencing the same thing.
So where are you in the process now? Since part of the point is to have more people share openly.
Yeah.
Have you started treatments, or where are you?
Yeah, so actually, I have started the journey, and it's so funny because my husband hates the word journey. He thinks it's overused, but the our beginnings, and, you know, started the process. We're actually going today for the class, right? You go through a class, and they go through every detail and show videos and everything of what you're going to go through, what your partner's going to go through the entire process, and we started our, you know, pills, and I think hormone shots start next week. And so I'll be, you know, using the hashtag and, you know, the same thread, just talking about the journey. And there's so much, right? There's the how your health insurance company impacts. I mean, part of the reason why we didn't start the process until this year is because we had to change health insurances because the insurance that we had didn't cover IVF. And so we would have had to come out of pocket.
A lot of insurance doesn't cover IVF, right?
Right. And so, you know, part of the reason why we had the delay is that we had to do that, right? We had to, you know, find an insurance company that would cover it. So, and there's still out-of-pocket cost associated with it. And interestingly enough, there is also still a disparity, even in IVF, on the rates of success for Black women. And researchers don't know why. I mean, controlling for class, for income, education level, it's not an access issue. There are still, you know, Black women just have lower success rates than other women, and also have higher preterm delivery rates than other women, right? And there's, and part of, I think, the conversation about being open and talking about the process is, you know, maybe we can also find some commonalities. There can be some more research on why particularly fertility issues are impacting Black women in this country.
My guest is Eljoy Williams, head of the Brooklyn chapter of the NAACP and host of the Sunday Civics podcast. She's been on in both those capacities in the past. Today, she's here talking about her fertility journey, as she just put it, despite what her husband thinks about it, and the new hashtag that she's created for Twitter, BlackNIVF. And we can take a few phone calls. So listeners, are you a Black woman going through fertility struggles? What's been your experience? Maybe it would help other women to hear a little of your story, which is exactly why Eljoy Williams is sharing hers. Have you tried IVF or other fertility methods? Have you felt comfortable talking about your struggles? If not, why not? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Joy, how much did Michelle Obama's openness about her fertility struggles and IVF journey and the publicity that got, and positively so, inspire you to speak out?
Yeah. So I, before she came out, in some couple of years, I've talked openly about the loss. I talked publicly about miscarriages and, you know, getting close, getting over the 40, which, you know, your egg reserve sort of drops significantly after, you know, 30, 35. So I had talked about that, but hadn't yet made the decision about whether I was going to talk about or in what capacity I would talk about going through IVF or not. And certainly seeing the conversation as people began to hear her story made an impact, because it was like, you know, here is this woman. Obviously, we think very highly, you know, of Michelle Obama, but she's also in a different, you know,
stratosphere,
right,
from everybody else.
Right. And when you think of when people have the common conversation about IVF, they think about it as being a wealthy white woman, you know, thing for access to fertility. you know, it's not something that's talked about as a common procedure that women mm-hmm. in general should have access to mm-hmm. Regarding pursuing having children. And so, you know, my conversation was, it helped me over the edge in like, there should be more of us talking about this so that we can make it a part of the regular conversation and not that it's something that wealthy people do or that, you know, former first ladies have access to.
We'll bring the Netflix movie Private Life into the conversation when we continue after a break. And a few callers at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with L. Joy Williams, head of the Brooklyn chapter of the NAACP and host of the Sunday Civics podcast, and now the creator of the hashtag #BlackAndIVF as she shares her journey with in vitro fertilization and fertility in general to help other women in general and Black women in particular after findings from the Black Women's Health Imperative that Black women are less comfortable on average talking about their fertility struggles than other women. And let's take a phone call. Ramona in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hello, Mr. Brian Lehrer. I am a wonderfully happy woman right now because I'm talking to you.
I'm blushing.
I just wanted to tell my story, a little short story, so I could give her some hope that it does happen. My twins just turned 22 on February 24th. In vitro fertilization, miracle babies, I call them, because they are. So it happens. It happened on the second cycle. And it was amazing. And they are amazing.
And congratulations. Wonderful for you. I mean, even though they're, you know, grown kids, you know, it just, and hearing the stories from women like yourself of talking about, you know, how often, because that's something that the doctor is like preparing us for, right? Like that it may be multiple cycles that you have to go through.
Yeah,
and some women
yeah.
are talking about 3, 2, you know, and so being prepared for that, you know, we talk about being, you know, excited and hopeful, but also pragmatic, right? Like that this is a process, this is a, you know, that we have little to no control over, but yeah. there could be success at the end of the journey.
Ramona, thank you so much. Please call us again.
Thank you, and I give you lots of hope.
Thank you so much.
And I hope to hear when you're pregnant again on the radio.
Thank you.
Now we're committed because of Ramona.
Yeah, now everybody is committed.
When you're pregnant again.
Yeah, I have to come back now.
But she talked about multiple cycles.
Yeah.
And you tweeted, so we just met with insurance and finance folks, and there's a chance insurance may deny going straight to IVF and require 3 rounds of IUI first.
Yeah.
So do you want to explain the difference between IUI and IVF?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, in vitro is basically they take everything out. So they take the egg out, they take the man's sperm out, and they put it in a petri dish, force fertilization, and you get an embryo. And then they take that embryo and put it back inside the uterus and hope that it implants, right, that it takes from there. IUIs is basically they take the sperm out and they try to force it into flush it into your uterus to force fertilization in the natural process in terms of that way. As I described, you know, there's an insurance process. So you're not only dealing with the medical process and dealing with the doctors and what they prescribe, but then you're dealing with an insurance company and what they will approve in terms of what they recover. And so when we talk about people having greater access to these tools that are wealthy, right? They can buy, they don't have to worry about an insurance conversation. If they want to do IVF and they want to go straight to that, they can pay out of pocket and go straight there. But for others that are relying on health coverage in order to pursue having children, you know, they are also subject to these regulations.
And you usually come on to talk about politics.
Yeah.
There are some bills, I understand, in Albany. I don't know how much progress they're making to expand the current infertility insurance law in New York State.
Absolutely.
To include coverage of in vitro fertilization and fertility preservation for cancer patients, and it adds non-discrimination language. Are you familiar with them, and do you think they have a chance?
Yeah. You know, I've been, you know, in my capacity in advocating an NAACP, going up to Albany. I'll actually be up in Albany tomorrow on fair elections, right? And in the overall budget process, talking about a host of issues. And from a health disparity aspect, I've been up to talk about sickle cell, been up to talk about blood transfusions, and also, you know, having access for reproductive issues here in the state. And at one point, the State Department of Health did have IVF assistance in, you know, was pushing for it in the budget. And, you know, there are a couple of bills, and particularly as it pertains to black maternal health in general in New York State. I know the governor, the legislature, there's a pilot program about providing black women access to caregivers and to help support once women are pregnant, and helping them deliver to term, because, again, we have an issue with preterm births in the state as well.
Brandy in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Brandy.
Hi. Thanks for adding me to the conversation. So I wanted to say one thing really quickly. There's so much to obviously talk about, or so many topics in this conversation, but I guess, you know, people associate it with like a women's issue. Sometimes it's not. Like, I had IVF myself, and the issue happened to be on the guy's side, but like, I think that sometimes also adds to the stigma of it's a woman's problem and it's a woman's issue, and sometimes women don't want to talk about it because it's not their issue to talk about. But anyway, that aside, like, sometimes it's just a couple issue, but we did have IVF. We were successful. Luckily, we have twins, had twins. We're now almost two. And we're, you know, we were very fortunate, but being a black woman and going through the IVF process, it was very isolating because often I was the only black woman in the room, in the hospital, getting treatment and, you know, going in and going out and kind of being, even though there's, you know, they offered support groups and things like that, but knowing that you were really kind of the only person who was in that situation, or that you felt like you were the only person in that situation, despite being surrounded by all these other women, because we come from a culture that doesn't talk about this, was really weird. And after it turned out that, like, around Thanksgiving, when I announced to my family that I was pregnant, I found out that my cousin had also gone through IVF and had, like, failed IUIs just like we did, and had actually, she had twins, and one of her twins, like, absorbed the other twin. Like, all of these weird things that happen during pregnancy and in the whole process of, you know, conceiving, and none of us had talked about it. And if we would have felt so much better just having that conversation with each other and knowing someone we're related to was going through the same exact issue at the same exact time. So, you know, I mean, everything worked out, although it's really weird now because now the question is, oh, you have twins? Do twins run in your family?
Yes, the answer would be yes.
Oh, yeah. You know, actually, my grandmother did have twins, and that's usually the answer I give. But, you know, it's an awkward conversation to start with someone about,
yes,
hey,
absolutely,
tell me about how you had sex. And, like, what happened?
Brandy, you know, thank you so much. I got to go because the show's almost over, but thank you so, so much.
Yeah.
And if Oprah Magazine helped to start this conversation about black women not feeling comfortable more than other women talking about infertility, maybe based on what Brandy said at the beginning of her call, Oprah Magazine needs to do another one about men.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and just as we talked about the insurance process, right, like that if there was an issue on my husband's side, they would go straight, you know, it would be automatically approved to go straight to IVF, right, rather than go like that if the issue was just on the women's side. So I think talking about it as reproductive issues overall, and reproductive issues is not just for women, it's also for men, and talking about that in totality.
So in our last minute, in your Twitter thread, you mentioned ways in which IVF might affect your career.
Yeah.
And one of them is that, quote, you wanted to work on a presidential campaign for over a decade, unquote, and that you have this opportunity now, but that your IVF might change that. So first of all, who's your candidate?
Well, I don't have a candidate right now. I was talking to a lot of the campaigns and candidates, and, you know, it was a real discussion. You know, of
you're still assessing who you support.
I'm still assessing who I support, but then also actually working on a campaign, you know, people thinking that, are you going to really work on the campaign? Or are you just trying to get pregnant? And, you know, what does that mean to win an election?
Leave
right.
In the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. So
now
it's difficult.
Now that political campaigns are a lot more than
a lot longer.
9 months.
Yes.
And so we leave it there with Eljoy Williams, head of the Brooklyn chapter of the NAACP and host of the Sunday Civics podcast. You can follow her on Twitter at Eljoy Williams, and she's now using the hashtag BlackNIVF for her journey about this. Thank you so much.
Thank you.